And that famous music means it's time for another great edition of Sports Club. I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Welcome in. We are starting a little later tonight, but we wanted to make sure to get our guest on, even though he is one of our co-hosts. It's good to have him back on. Of course, I want to bring on right now Coach Hill. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. It's we're back in that time of year where it, at least around the Atlanta metro area, it seems to just sprinkle rain all day long. But, at least it's not cold.
Yes, that's the upside to the rain.
Yeah, because nothing personal, but thanks to last year, I don't think we really need it.
No, I think we're heading to having the second wettest season as of right now in the history of Georgia.
Yeah, I absolutely. Of course, some things we're going to get into tonight. We're going to talk some playoff wild card weekend. Of course, it's coming up this weekend. We're going to talk a little bit about the coaching carousel, even though it's to this part of the carousel where they're just now buying their ride tickets, their tickets to the ride, basically. We're not sure who's going to be in what seat or anything like that, but we'll go over some of that. We'll kind of wrap up the season that was for the Falcons and some things that they've done in between time that changes are coming, just like I predicted. And then we'll go over our picks for the playoffs. We will restart everything. So once again, Cody was able to beat us. I think he ended up one or so ahead of me. No, he ended up four ahead of me, but that's all right. The playoffs are here, and we will have new things to pick. But first, we kind of want to do a regular season wrap-up, and we're not going to go team by team because that just is time-consuming. And if you listen to this show, there's a good chance that you watch this year's season, so there's not much we're going to tell you that you don't already know. Basically, the way I want to wrap this up is to say, Coach, was there anything this season that really stuck out to you? The way I phrased it before we got started tonight to you was, if somebody – doesn't matter how many years from now, said, hey, what was it about the NFL season in 2018 that really stuck out to you? Like, if I was to go back and look up film or look up a certain moment, what would you have me go back and look at?
I think the biggest thing that stood out to me was how well the quarterbacks played this year, the ones that took over some teams with Mahomes and Jackson being over in Baltimore. But overall, I think – a lot of the players that came in as rookies this year and that were drafted by their teams really made some tremendous impacts, and they were ready to play. So each year what I'm finding is that more and more of the rookies that are coming in, depending on where they fall in the draft and the strategies that work there, how they're impacting their teams immediately as they're hitting the field.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, we could easily mention any of the rookie quarterbacks because all of them have seemed to – be able to at least carve out a little bit of a spot in this year's season to where, you know, you could say, all right, well, I see the things you accomplished there. You did make your team better. I don't think any of them made their teams worse. The weird thing about the rookie quarterbacks to me is outside of Baker Mayfield, and he's ever been as exciting as you think he would be. He's going to do some stuff good in Cleveland. I actually think if you kind of redrafted everything again, I think Jared Allen may go a lot higher. That kid's got some electricity to him. Or not Jared Allen, it's what's his name? Josh Allen.
Yeah, Josh, he did really, really well. Again, like I said, that's the biggest takeaway that I have from this particular season is basically the 2018 season brought about a lot of rookie impacts, and it's getting better If you go back even to 2017, you look at the quarterback play there and some of the guys that came in as rookies. So now each year is getting a little bit better. So now drafting that impact player becomes more and more prevalent when teams are looking at how they're going to move themselves around and how they're going to move their picks around to get either more quantity and or quality in the first three picks.
Yeah, I absolutely agree there. But, you know, I do have to kind of agree with what you were saying there as well, that there wasn't a lot of those really defining moments where, you know, I mean, there wasn't that many milestones that were hit as far as the big ones. Drew Brees moving himself up a lot of quarterback lists, but the award that always matters to him is a Super Bowl ring. But it just seemed like overall it was just a good, solid season. If you, especially if you were a fan, it was just a good one to sit down and watch, like almost like a good TV series.
Right, I agree. It was just that, like I said, I don't think – you know, there were some disappointing moments for some fans and their teams, naturally, if you're not in postseason play. But overall, I think that the product was good on the field this year. We had some good close games throughout the year. That kind of went back and forth. And I think one of the most surprising things, too, was that you had a chance to see some players that might have been on rosters that names you've never heard of before make an impact as well and actually raise their stock in the NFL as professional players.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with that. It was very much a year of, so we've never heard of you before, prove to us why we should remember you. And there was a lot of guys that put themselves on radars that, you know, outside of some of these new leagues that are spawning up, the AAF that'll be starting this February, and then the XFL, and there's some other ones apparently that even some NFL players are a part of. Besides those outlets that are now available, it looks like a lot of these guys were able to prove they belong in the league.
Absolutely. And it just proves that, you know, again, when it comes down to scouting and evaluating players, that, you know, don't get me wrong, I mean, it's not 100% proof, but it's pretty solid in the evaluation process of making sure that you get the best possible athlete in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree there for sure. You know, like I said, we're not going to go team by team or nothing like that. That's, I mean, if like I said, if somebody were to ask me in the future, whether distant or whether, you know, out across years from now, I would tell them the 2018 was about an emerging rookie class, especially of quarterbacks, but I mean the Saquon Barkley, some of these defenders that have come out of nowhere, and just overall, it's a season worth watching. So, you know, without further ado, I think we're just going to go straight into the playoffs now.
Okay.
Where, for some reason, even when I sent you guys the game picks, and we'll get to our picks here in a minute, on my sheet, I still wrote down San Diego, but on all the picks, we happen to put the L.A. Chargers. So I guess I'm never going to get that out of my head.
it'll take a little while. By next season, you'll be okay with it.
Maybe so. I mean, you know, I mean, we could get into that too. But it seems like next season, it's not only will the Chargers and Rams still be in L.A., but it looks like the Raiders are going to leave Oakland, but not for Las Vegas yet. Seems like they could be in San Francisco. So, I mean, it's just chaos over in California.
Well, yeah, they have a lot of teams. They have a lot of teams to try to support. So
that they do. And, you know, I do want to get your take on that. And I know because the personal relation you have with Reggie McKenzie, you may keep it brief or short, or even if you chose not to comment, that's fine. But, you know, what did you think of that whole situation? And, do you think he's going to try to get another position somewhere, or do you think he's going to call it?
No, absolutely. I think he'll be up for another position. I think Mr. McKenzie proved himself in Oakland. As a matter of fact, when he took that job, it wasn't like the organization was in his best situation. He came in, he really did some great things with that organization.
Oh, yeah.
And also bringing in Amari Cooper, as well as getting Khalil Mack, which was your defensive player of the year. But with that being said, I think that when you look at how Coach Gruden's contract was structured, I personally felt that it was going to be a situation where I thought they at least he would transition over into Vegas with them and kind of help them set up shop, then maybe something different would come out of that. I did not expect it to come as quick as it did. However, I do have some ideas as to where he could possibly be some immediate help to at least two organizations that I see right now. And as we get further down into the show, you know, I'll re-reference that. But I do think that he'll land again with no problem. I think Mr. McKenzie is very well respected in the National Football League amongst not only the owners, but coaches and players alike.
Yeah, and just disclaimer, like I said, even though you know Mr. McKenzie on more than just a passengers on a train capacity, you have no inside information. These are just ideas off the top of your head as to, you know, places he might could help.
Right, correct.
I say not that we ever get anybody that reaches out, but, you know, just in case, you know, his representation reached out and said, hey, where did you hear that from? Just want to say these are complete opinions when we get into that. We like to be up front with everybody. But let's jump into these wild card matchups. And, you know, without revealing what our picks are at the moment, we'll do those at the end of this. I think we're just going to go right in order of how they're going to happen. The Indianapolis Colts are going to travel to Houston to face the it seems like all they were missing was a quarterback, Houston Texans. This is the early game, the 4:35 game on Saturday. Houston started off as the big powerhouse, and then they kind of – it's not that they coasted, but it's like when they got to the end, they realized they had about as many wins as they were going to need. And it seems like Indianapolis just got better and better and better each week. It seems that all Andrew Luck needed was, you know, some skill players on a line in front of him. I mean, how novel of a concept is that?
I agree. I mean, I think that the Colts have a hot hand right now. I think it's going to be tough to go into Houston and win, though. I think that with the fact that they have a very good defense, so when I look at teams, I kind of look at how they're balanced. And right now I think that the Colts are more offensive heavy than they have defense and special team balance. It could easily be a shootout, I think. But I do think that right now the difference that the problem that the Colts are going to face defensively is having a Deshaun Watson who's very mobile and can give you a lot with his, you know, can extend plays with his feet and with his legs and also with his arms. So I think, and then being, having that hometown, the home field advantage also plays a role. So it's going to be real interesting how that turns out. I think that'll come down to time of possession. If the Colts can hold them off with time of possession, then it might be very tough for the, you know, the Texans to pull it off. But right now, I think that the Texans are, you know, probably the stronger team in that particular battle between those two.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a good leadoff game. You know, a lot of people know on this show that I reference pro wrestling a lot because I've always been a big fan of it. But I'm going to reference it here because the NFL is not dumb with their programming. They do the best they can. They try to put their feature games. It's so hard, like a year out, to try to figure out, you know, you may look and say Arizona versus Cleveland may be a bad matchup right now, but by the time they meet on a Thursday night in week 8, it might be, you know, it might be two fringe playoff teams or something. But to start off with Indianapolis at Houston, I think what you do with a wrestling show is you put your what you think is your second best match goes on first. It opens the card because you want everybody into it. You want that electricity. You want that excitement. You want everybody so geared up that it doesn't really, for the most part, all the stuff in between, you're trying to balance out to where you get to your main event. I think that's what they're doing here. This Indianapolis-Houston, it's they've played each other twice already this year. This is a division matchup. Indianapolis and Houston are not that far away, and you got two emerging teams that are trying to get back where they were. So for it to be the leadoff game, I think it was the best leadoff game, only because the second game we'll get into here in a minute had to be a primetime game.
Okay. I agree. I think that this is kind of the energy starter, if you will.
Yeah, and as we go through these, like you can tell, obviously, I honestly thought that the next game we're going to get into, the 8:15 start on Saturday, Seattle at Dallas. I thought actually that was going to be the late Sunday game, but you know, they put a different game there. By far, this is one of those. If it was a wrestling card, you say this one could steal the show, and at the same time, it could be highly disappointing, just depending on if these offenses show up and if the defenses show up.
Yeah, again, I mean, you know, you got a great matchup between two teams, and it's going to be real interesting to see, who's going to come and show up, because now there are no tomorrows. When you're coaching in
right.
the playoffs, you either play or you get off. that's off the field. That's pretty much how it's defined. So it's going to be very interesting again to see, you know, how focused teams will be, but more importantly, what they look like coming out of that last regular season game. How healthy are they? So that's going to be the other part of it. How healthy is your team going into the playoffs, knowing that you only have one, you have to now move one game at a time, literally. You have to win one game at a time before you end up in Atlanta in the Super Bowl. So now the question is now is how prepared is Dallas? How well is Prescott right now? How healthy is your running back? So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. And they were having some problems in Dallas earlier. So the question is, have they
yeah.
been able to get those little kinks out of their offense and get themselves back on pace now to do what's going to be necessary to win?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's, just a couple weeks ago, we were, or at least I was, trying to not only run the quarterback of Dallas out of town, I was trying to run the coach as well. I'm still, I don't know, that could be its own podcast at this point as to how I've flipped on one, but not on the other. But
right.
you look at Dallas and the way they were able, it's amazing how it's the same way, since there's hockey on here at the studio as we record, it's in the same way that a fight can energize a team in a hockey game and get that energy and excitement back up. A trade can do the same thing, and the trade for Amari Cooper somehow put not only wind back in the sails, but it might have repaired the broken ship that was the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, all of a sudden they take their division. Here they are hosting a playoff game and a game that they realistically have a chance to win. But on the flip side, you get the surging Russell Wilson. I believe last week I made the case that the two best quarterbacks in the league right now, they make all the throws, what they do for their teams, it's Andrew Luck and it's Russell Wilson. It's 100%. I would trust them over anybody else in the league right now because they are making plays and making throws that should be like a glitch on a Madden football game.
I agree. It's a tale of two cities. If I back up and I look at Dallas, and again, you know, we referenced Reginald McKenzie early. You know, that was a pick
mm-hmm.
that he brought into Oakland. He became now the deep threat that Dallas needed at a critical time. So now they go right in with what they have now. They have a good running game. They have a quarterback that can also extend plays, and then they have a deep threat, and they have a home field advantage. It'll be tough
mm-hmm.
to go in and beat them. However, when you turn the page and you look at the Seattle Seahawks, you look at a Russell Wilson who's been there, who's done that, and they have a lot to prove right now, especially with the team being pretty much revamped over the last 2 years. Coach Carroll has a lot to prove right now, not as a coach,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, now that these changes have been made and the team has kind of been dismantled over the last 2 or 3 years, what does that residue look like now after it has all settled? So now that's going to be a big difference maker. You know, can Prescott handle the pressure and can Wilson go in and prove his veteran status and rally his team behind him to pull it off in Dallas? It's going to be an interesting game to see.
Oh, yeah. I know this is going to be random, but do you remember the doctor's name from the story of Frankenstein?
I can't say other than Dr. Frankenstein.
Yes,
No.
that's what I was thinking. It, you know, that's what it is. It's Dr. Frankenstein, and then it's Frankenstein's monster. Okay. Well, I was just going to say that Pete Carroll and his general manager up in Seattle should change their name to Dr. Frankenstein, because what they have done with this roster, it's supposed to be a rebuilding year. They were supposed to be changing over from the dominant quick defense that apparently Dan Quinn's trying to do here in Atlanta. They're go more offensive heavy with Russell Wilson leading the charge, and they got that part. We all knew, kind of saw that develop, not quite as good as it has. But like I said, this is supposed to be a rebuilding year where they're like second or third in their division, and suddenly here they are in a wild card with a chance to disrupt somebody who won their division and potentially, I mean, move on. I mean, honestly, I think you could make a legitimate case for almost every team in the playoffs right now to win the Super Bowl, and that's it's been a long time since you could say that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this playoff run has been very well matched up, and I think the right team
yeah.
is in right now. So I don't think there's any question about it. I think the teams that really have to kind of keep their finger on the pulse are the ones that got the bye week and see how this thing really turns out, because sometimes, although the byes help you later in the season to get your team healthy, it also can throw you off just a little bit. And if you catch a team with the right momentum, they can do it. If you go back, I don't remember exactly what year it was when the Giants came in, I think 9-7, if I remember that year, and went on to win the
Something
Super
like
Bowl.
That.
And so, again, you know, it can happen. So, you know, you can't – this year, all of the teams that are in are the teams that are supposed to be in, and they all are capable of winning it. So it's going to be real interesting
yeah.
to see how quick this goes from this weekend into next, you know, the next week or two as we get closer to the Super Bowl, you know, how that's going to work itself out. But this is going to go really, really fast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an action-packed weekend. I feel like there's going to be a lot of not just guys anymore, because the NFL is really attracting the female market and everything else too now. I think there's going to be a lot of birthday parties and holiday gatherings where people are going to be huddled around TVs and iPads and phones. And if you can't watch some of these games live when you're at some of these shindigs and parties, then, you know, there's going to be the designated guy who keeps going, having to go to his car and he ends up checking scores. But it's one of those where I think people are – almost every game is a can't miss. You need to tune in at least for a couple minutes.
Yeah, I agree. You're gonna want to catch some of these games.
The first game up on Sunday, which is one of the more interesting time slots, I think, for the playoffs. But I mean, I understand why they do it when they do. But being that opening game where you're the only one on, it almost becomes a primetime spot to a point. But you have the LA Chargers going to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. And without even saying Phillip Rivers and getting into that, I think we should start with Baltimore and say this is a team that was almost like Dallas, where everybody was trying to run John Harbaugh out of town. Everybody's trying to run Joe Flacco out of town. That's probably going to happen. You have the emergence of one of these quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson that I know you were high on a couple years ago. And like I said, Baltimore and Dallas are two teams that here they are sitting as division winners, and not more than a month and a half ago, everybody thought it was all going to go south and these two teams would start blowing everything up.
Right. And again, like you said, that was one of the things I was saying about Lamar Jackson when I saw him at Louisville. I'm happy that you pointed that out too. You know, about a year, 2 years ago, I was saying Lamar Jackson was this kid that was going to come to the NFL and play well. And again, he was one of the last picks of their former general manager, Ozzie Newsome, who's another individual
yep.
That I'll speak of as well. As it comes to, you know, there are a couple of teams that possibly could use his services if he chooses not to stay as a scout, or if he's retired, maybe bring him on as a consultant. So, again,
yep.
you know, the picks and the guys that got picked went to the right team. And that's what I'm trying to most definitely emphasize here is that, again, Lamar Jackson was a late first-round pick. As a matter of fact, I think he was second to last or something like that. But,
yeah,
again,
I think
he
so.
Goes right into Baltimore when they needed another quarterback. They needed something to energize that team. and he stepped right in, and he's done his due diligence on the field. I mean, I think the pick was perfect for Baltimore, and I think they found their quarterback for the future, or at least for the next three to four years at least, if they want to go in
right.
a different direction, depending on what they do with the coaching staff and the style of coaching or what have you. But as far as having the athlete at the position right now, they most definitely solved that issue for themselves.
Oh yeah, and I would echo even taking out the part where I knew that you and Ozzie Newsome may know each other and may have crossed paths a few times. I sing his praises all the time, even back before we even crossed paths. Is that him and Reggie McKenzie, and there's a handful of other ones that when you look at their body of work and the teams that they build, and sometimes you know fixing cap problems and all these, they have built. You know, perennial winners just for some reason they end up, you know, leaving their teams and through whatever the situations are. But moving over to the Chargers side, like I said, we could say Phillip Rivers. I think Phillip Rivers has had probably one of his best years, and not just because they're winning. He actually has a healthy, deep team that is, you know, that's what's always been the thing. They always have those key injuries that somehow take them out of the playoffs late in the charge. But this time around, I think the Chargers, if you line it up on paper, and we all know that they play on grass and dirt and turf, but if you line it up on paper, this Chargers team might be the most talented, deep team of all the playoff teams.
Yes, and again, you know, they were healthy. They come in with a new head coach who's in his second season there, who comes in again and realizes, you know, the key to winning is being able to keep your team healthy as much as you
yeah.
possibly can, you know, barring a season-ending injury or one that's going to take them out half the season. I think they were really smart in moving some guys around as far as the time that they spent on the field. They kept their team healthy, and, you know, and even Rivers himself stayed healthy. For the most part this year. So that said a lot as well. So I think that, you know, again, the Chargers have proven that, you know, they're in it to win it this year. I think Rivers is kind of, you know, he's kind of long in the tooth at this point. He realizes
mm-hmm.
that his years are short, and he knows that the time is now. And he's commanding that team as well as other veteran players on that team. They realize that, you know, when they got the train going in the direction that they need to go, they're full steam ahead right now. So the Chargers are a team, again, who'd have ever thought that they would have been such an impact team? I felt that they would be at least a postseason play team, but who'd have
yeah.
ever thought they would have been as impactful of a team this year as they've been against the opponents that they played?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, they got to be one of the perennial favorites. And first of all, I have to pat us both on the back that we're able to break down these games without showing favoritism. But, you know, we can actually do that. We just choose not to most other weeks. But, I mean, the Chargers have to be one of those teams that when you look at everybody on their side of things for the AFC, they have the potential and it's sometimes going to be favored against everybody in the AFC. And you look in the NFC side, and it's pretty much the same boat. They're one of those really, really strong teams that has the potential to beat anybody.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I said this playoff, this is the one thing I think the takeaway coming into 2019 off of 2018 is going to be really exciting is because some of these teams emerged and
mm-hmm.
they surged late. And now the question is, with all of them matching up, you know, so well, I don't see – there is no team right now that is slighted currently over this weekend that I see. It's just going to, a team that's going to dominate the other. I don't see that.
Right.
I do see,
right.
you know, it's going to boil down to time of possession, special team plays, field position, and that one turnover or that one three and out or one missed field goal or whatever it may be, the anomaly in the game that's going to make the difference of who wins or who loses. But head-to-head, it's just hard to determine right now who's going to just really take it based upon what they all have. And the one thing they all have in common is that most of these teams, if not all these teams, are probably 80 to 90% healthy with their starters.
Yep.
So that puts
exactly.
your matchups there. I mean, it's going to be hard to kind of get your matchups there when you were, you know, normally you have, like you said earlier, you have key players that are out right now for various reasons, and you kind of start to see which way the pendulum is going to swing. But going into this weekend, I don't see that being the case at all.
And it's going to turn into a good transition, because one of the teams we're about to talk about with the late game, aka the 4:40 game on Sunday, as Philadelphia will go to Chicago in what I think will be a very fantastic matchup. You know, Philly last year, I credit a lot of their success to they were the healthiest team when the playoffs rolled around, and so everybody else is having to sign people off the street just to dress enough players. And here they are playing their first stringers all the time. I think it had a lot to do with their run on top of them being talented. But they run into what could be the buzzsaw of this year, and that's the Chicago Bears, that if their offense can ever figure out how to score 25 points a game, I don't know that they're going to lose, because their defense can hold you under 20 at any given time.
Yeah, and that's going to be the challenge for them going into Chicago, and that's the challenge Chicago faces as well, is that, you know, now it's crunch time. And I think the one thing that kind of helps Chicago is the fact that they're not traveling, that they're going to be playing at home. You're going to be, you know, on their, you know, in their environment, in their stadium. And it might be one of the things that gives them the edge. I'm not quite sure. But again, go back to what ignited Chicago this year. Again, a Reggie McKenzie's pick, a draft pick out of Oakland called Khalil Mack, which was a kid that I was really high on. If you remember a couple of years back when he came out of Buffalo, I was high on him as well coming into the draft, saying this kid has the ability to go put his hand in the dirt to play, rush in, and also can stand up and play linebacker for you because he's so athletic. So, again, another key, and all it took was just one player to come over and make the difference in their defense. Look how phenomenal they played this year just with his presence. And not only his influence on the field and his impact play, but his presence alone just changed the whole mindset and the play of their defense altogether. So this, again, is going to be one of those games where it's going to boil down to, you know, just helmet on helmet and you know, who wants it more than the other guy at the end of the day.
Yeah, because I very much think, given both the way both these teams play, they're very centered around their defenses, and they use their offense, especially with Carson Wentz down. None personal Nick Foles, but there is a difference in the way they play. They do air it out more with Wentz. I think the way that they're playing right now with Foles, there's a lot of similarities to Chicago, where they're going to rely on their defenses, and they're going to – I mean, it's almost going to be old-school football, where I believe they're going to center more around the run. They're going to really try to disrupt things and just beat you up front. And, you know, this is going to be one of those throwback main events that NFL fans are always looking for.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this particular game play itself out, because, again – one of the challenges that the defensive coordinator for Chicago has is that they have two quarterbacks who have experience and can win in postseason play, especially even with Foles, who won the Super Bowl with them last year. So now he has to prepare not only for two quarterbacks that can possibly start, but their third-string quarterback as well. So, the question is now, because it's already been proven, it's happened in Philly. You know, they won with their backup quarterback for the Super Bowl. So now that you have Wentz, you have Foles, and you have the third-string quarterback who did not play bad at all, their final game, you know, he has to prepare across the board. You know, now can his defense, how well can they learn all of the different things it's going to take to contain, if not one, but all three of those quarterbacks?
Right. Yeah, like I said, if you're an NFL fan, this season might have been one of the best up and down regular season. You know, there's something for everybody. The playoffs are going to be just totally jacked the way they are. You know, let's go on and get into our picks. We'll hit some coaching real quick, and I know you might have to go here in a minute, so I want to try to get through some of this. We'll start with the Indianapolis and the Houston game. Who did you have in that one?
Okay, I took Houston in this game. I took Houston for the very reasons that I spoke of up front, home field advantage. I think that Watson can do some things that can really hurt the Colts as far as the defense by keeping them on the field longer, because he can extend plays with his legs and with his arms. I think they're hitting right at the time that they need to. And I think it's a time for the for them now. I think that time has come. I think in the beginning of the show we spoke of them needing a quarterback. I think they've found their quarterback. I think he understands exactly what he has to do now to win, and more especially win in postseason play. So I took the Houston, I took the Texans over the Colts for that very reason.
Well, I think you already know all of our picks because we actually posted them earlier so that we all knew them. You and Reggie are taking Houston in this one, and myself and Cody are taking Indianapolis. I'm a huge fan of practically every defender Houston has, especially Whitney Mercilus. I know I've talked about him probably more than his own mother might. I do think he is the cog that makes that whole wheel of a defense work, but it's a lot of times the tiebreaker for me in some of these playoff matchups is who is the hotter team, who is the hotter hand. And, you know, I made my case in the last couple of weeks about the two best quarterbacks being Russell Wilson and Andrew Luck, and Luck's just playing on a completely different level that we haven't seen since maybe his time with the other Harbaugh at Stanford. And that's why I took Indiana. I feel like there's the slightly hotter team, and I feel like if it's going to get into a shootout, somehow he's going to figure out a way to win.
Okay, we'll know soon.
Yeah. That will be I will be one of those said people at a shindig that will be trying to catch that game as much as I can. I will be DVRing it, but that's okay for anybody that wants to live update it. You're not going to hurt my feelings because even if I know the outcome, I'm going to go back and watch that game.
Mm-hmm.
The next game, the 8 o'clock game, 8:15 rather, Seattle at Dallas. I will go ahead and say I am on an island on this pick, and I'm surprised that King Atielian did not try to dangle this over me like I did that bet he paid off earlier this year.
Yeah, I think Seattle. I'm picking Seattle in this game strictly because of the experience of a Russell Wilson over
mm-hmm.
a Dak Prescott right now. Again, it's going to be tough, but I took the philosophy that you took in the previous pick with the Colts. I think that when it comes down to finding a way to win, Russell Wilson's resume has spoke several times in games where he's had to do that, and I think he understands the magnitude of what he's facing in Dallas. I think Dallas is the team that has the advantage being at home. But I think when it comes down to the wire, and we're talking about, let's say, 10 seconds left on the clock, and they got to have a touchdown, I think Russell Wilson is that guy that can do it. And so for that reason, the experience alone is why I'm going with what they have in the coaching staff and Pete Carroll, in the mindset of a Russell Wilson, who's been there and done that with that coach. That's the reason why I'm taking Seattle in this. I just think that they have something that Dallas has quite not seen yet in a couple of wrinkles that'll make a difference in the football game.
And that's very possible. And I just realized that in the first matchup, I took the hotter hand as far as the offense, and you took the better defense, and then we swapped in this game. I think it's I agree that if there's 10 seconds on the clock and Russell Wilson has the ball, it ain't over yet. But I had to go with the Cowboys, and that's not even me homering out. I just feel like they have the home field advantage that you talked about. For some reason, when they play at Jerry World, they are almost untouchable, and it's so crazy the way that works. I think they're going to be about 90% healthy by the time this rolls around. But as long as Ezekiel Elliott's their running back, I think they're super hard to beat. He takes all the pressure off of Dak having to spread it around. But it just – for some reason, I think Dallas is going to win just because it's a home game. I think if this was played anywhere else, I think Seattle wins it. And I do know that, the L.A. Rams have the – do they have the number one seed?
I think they do. If I'm not mistaken, they do.
Well, whoever has the number one seed, they are pulling for the Dallas Cowboys in this one as well because nobody wants to see Seattle right now. They want somebody to knock them off.
Yeah, just everybody that has a number one seed right now has to be sitting on their hands wondering who they're going to play because, again, like we
right.
were saying earlier in the broadcast, you know, either one of these teams can compete and turn around and beat you. And so when you're at home, wait to see who you're going to play versus that team saying, hey, we already played a playoff game. This is the one you all have to kind of come in and beat us out of because we've already won one. So if we don't win against you, no, it's almost no harm, no foul because you're able to have another week of rest. But if you are not prepared, I mean, I think all of the number one seeds really right now have to be very, very cautious. I think either way, whomever they get, they're going to have to play hard football game to try to beat them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we say all the time that a bye week does two things. The positive thing it does is a bye week allows you to rest up, to heal injuries, do things like that. That's usually how it benefits you. It can detract from your team because sitting around for a week, I don't care how much you practice, if you don't have that live game situation, sometimes it puts even the best teams on their heels and they're playing catch up the whole game.
Correct. So very true.
But as we alluded to there, all three of you guys have Seattle, and I have the Dallas Cowboys. At this point, it's live or die with the Cowboys. It seems like that's always the Dallas mentality. So that's the way our fan base is, and even taking the fan hat off, I'll go that direction. Next game, the L.A. Chargers at the Baltimore Ravens. As much as we talked about the Ravens and how they've really turned around and maybe turned the page on transitioning from one era to the next, we all took the Chargers in this one. Why do you like the Chargers?
Again, I think the Chargers, the experience right now. I think that the Ravens are starting to rebuild right now, and they will emerge again with probably another 2-3 years to have the consistency that they need. But I think right now the Chargers just have everything in place right now, top to bottom, from special teams to defense to offense. I think the team, you know, they have enough veterans on both sides of the ball that can help now. And will pull them through this. And I think just the experience along this game right here, I picked strictly based upon experience. Athleticism, I think Baltimore has it, and they're on the uprise with it. I think they have the momentum on their side. But when it comes down to it, I think overall when you're talking about the starters, the experience, the health, I think the Chargers just have it all put together right now.
Yeah, it not only goes back into my hot hand situation that for some reason they've got them ready to go and in LA with the Chargers and everything. But yeah, I agree that Baltimore had a good season. They were able to make the transition from one quarterback to another, and they stuck to their guns on it. And I do like that, but I agree that this is kind of the anomaly year. I think they're going to take a step back next year. And then within the following years, they'll be back. They're not dumb. They're going to keep their coach. They got the other pieces in place. They're just, like you said, really, really young. A lot of them have never seen these kinds of games, and they're completely different animals. So if we all took the Chargers, that means for the only time this week.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
Because as we move to the next game, Cody is the one who is going to keep us from hearing the Homer soundbite there. So if you guys want to send him, I wouldn't call it hate mail, but if you guys ever want to mess with him on social media, go ahead and go for that. He took the Philadelphia Eagles in this one. I would have loved to hear his argument, which will be the excuse why they lost next week. But we'll get into that. The rest of us, me, yourself, and Reggie, all took Chicago. Why do you like the Bears?
I think the physicality of their defense is going to just be a little overwhelming for Philadelphia's offense. I think that emotion, it's going to be a very emotional game for Chicago. And I think that is what's going to drive them. I think it's just going to be hard to beat them in Chicago this time of the year. Both of them are cold weather teams, so that doesn't affect the outcome of the game. But I just think right now where Chicago is sitting, they're just a hard team to beat. I mean, you're going to have a lot. I mean, they're going to have at least 4 or 5 Philly special plays, in my opinion, to just trick them. Because the way that this defense is playing, the way that this team has come together, it's hard to beat a team. You've heard me say that many, many times. And the Chicago Bears, with the addition of Mr. Mack has now fully become a football team. They're a team that you have to beat now. I think that the quarterback, Trubisky, feeds off of what the defense does. They have a high expectation for him, and they make sure that he gets enough turnaround and turnovers and three and outs to give him the opportunity to make those kind of plays. I think that they're just sitting there right now making ready for it to happen. I think the offense is anxious to get out and prove that they're very appreciative of their defense. So that's why I took Chicago on this.
Yep. I'm looking at that forecast here. Ooh. Yep. Because I've been to Chicago a handful of times. Cold in Chicago and cold in Georgia, two completely different things. If you can't adapt to it quick enough, that Chicago cold will get you. But Sunday night or Sunday afternoon into evening, the high is 39 degrees. The winds early are going to be between 10 and 20 miles an hour, so a.k.a. typical Chicago January day. As we roll into the night, the winds pick up to about 17 to 25 miles an hour. The low at that point will be 38. There is 100% chance of rain. So it's going to be a very, very brutal, like the rain's going to be later towards the evening, but still it's going to be a pretty brutal Chicago cold winter day. So I think the Bears are going to have the advantage because they have played in it more. And there is a difference between Philly cold, Georgia cold, Chicago cold. And I think the Bears are just equipped to take this one.
Yeah, they're just going to be a trench team. I think they're just going to stick their cleats in the, you know, in the ground, and they're just not going to budge often. I think that their defense is just going to wall this thing out, and they're just going to keep coming and coming and coming and coming. And again, the upside for Philly, if we want to flip the coin on this, is that they're not worried about what happens at quarterback. If both of their quarterbacks are clear to play and healthy enough to play, then the upside to that is that you can always, you know, you can always spare them both by just switching them in and out according to series and down and distance.
Right.
So that also plays a role into it. So, again, Chicago has a lot to think about as well, but I just think that I think when it comes down to it, I think their defense is going to be more physical than Philly's offense. That's just my prediction. Now, again, we'll know, you know, after, you know, when it's all said and done, what's going to happen. But that's a typical day in Chicago, and that's typical football weather in Chicago, and they're prepared to come out and play in.
Yeah, and it's not just because of the stereotype and what people say. No, I've been in Chicago at this very time of year, and it's very much that's the norm. You get lucky if the high is in the high 30s like that. You're always going to get a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind. You're going to get the moisture the same way you do here, but it's a different kind of air up there. And like I said, if you don't adapt to it quick enough, it will get you. But let's just quickly kind of jump into the coaches stuff here. Better yet, let's hit the Falcons stuff real quick just to, I guess, get it out of the way. Because just as I said, when Arthur Blank saw what Atlanta United did in 2 years, I told everybody there's going to be some changes coming, and they're not going to be – I don't think it was going to be Dimitroff. I didn't think it was going to be Dan Quinn. I was like, but you're going to see a bunch of moving parts and some interchangeable ones. And sure enough, the offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, the defensive coordinator, Marcon Manuel, and the special teams coordinator, Keith Armstrong, are all gone. They're no longer a part of the organization. This was the house cleaning that, like I said, I didn't know which pieces, but I knew he saw what could work in just a short amount of time there. He was going to start using some of those principles somewhere else. You don't start Home Depot and make it a giant without knowing what you're doing, and he applied the same principle here.
Here's my thought, okay? I think that there are a couple of things that Atlanta could do different.
Mm-hmm.
I first have to start with some type of small shakeup with their upper management, looking at general manager, assistant general manager.
Mm-hmm.
If you heard me mention earlier, I mentioned that there were two people in particular I think that could come and help this organization. I feel that Dimitroff has, and don't get me wrong, he's done a good job with some picks. I think Reggie could come in and do better. I think that that could happen due to the fact that he has a better relationship overall with players throughout the league.
Right.
I think that's part of Mr. Dimitrios' issue when he was in New England with the head coach there as to why he ended up in Atlanta. So there's one move I think you have to look at, because one of the things I found interesting is although you have this huge coaching carousel, you don't have a lot of general managers being moved out as well. No general manager lost out other than Reggie.
Right.
And Ozzie. Now,
Newsom.
So now, those two guys, if you bring Reggie McKenzie in as your GM and you bring Ozzie Newsom in as a consultant, a special consultant to the GM, I think you can get a player that'll be banging on Atlanta's doors that they need, who will come probably play for less just because of the respect factor that they have for those two individuals. Okay. When it comes to Coach Quinn, I think that he is still most definitely growing at the position of head coach, because people must understand that he's not been a head coach very long. You know, this is
right.
His first opportunity moving from a coordinator position. I think his strength is defense. I don't feel that his defensive coordinator did bad. I don't feel that he did. I think he did a good job. There were times in the game I felt Coach took the reins of the defense back over. Why, I'm not quite sure of, but he did do that. So with that being the case, now offensively, here's the thing with the offensive coordinators. Matt Ryan has had quite a few in the last couple of years, and pretty much over his whole career. He's had a lot of different offensive coordinators. By far, his best productivity years came under Shanahan, which led them to a Super Bowl. Now, my concern with Sarkisian coming out, and I'm not against that particular move if that's what the organization felt that they needed to do. I could see some of the reason important to that. Some might say the offense was vanilla, not very sophisticated in his passing game or what have you. But my question to that would be two things. There were twice, if not three times during the season, they put up over 40 points.
Right.
One time they were saying that the line play was bad. Well, I don't know how your line play is that terrible, but yet you still put up those amount of points.
Right.
You lost a lot of close games at the end. Maybe four or five of those games this year you lost, within the last few minutes of the game. So then my question has to be is how much autonomy did Matt Ryan have in the offense in calling audibles? And so because we don't know that, I don't know how many plays that might have been called that would have worked if he stuck with the play, he being the quarterback, or if he audibled out the play and his audible didn't work because he had too much flexibility in the offense. So, again, that's my thing with the offense coordinator. Now, again, with the I think the defense coordinator should have been able to hang on, but that's neither here nor there. They made their decision. As far as special teams is concerned, again, I don't know what the special team coach didn't do well. I think a lot of it, was predicated around what you had in injuries and how many times you had to hit the field punt or kicking or what have you. So I don't know where that was ruffled. I'm not quite sure where they end up falling at the end of the year in special teams, but I don't think Atlanta did terrible at special teams. I think they just had to work with what they had. So I didn't see them playing bad at special teams. I don't remember them giving up a whole bunch of touchdowns or a whole bunch of bad field positioning, when it came to the kickoffs or the kickoff returns or the punts. So I'm not quite sure what went on with that. But, normally when that happens, a head coach is possibly about to face the hot seat the following year. So it was a blessing in disguise for them to go ahead and leave now and find themselves, other employment. So that, when it comes down, they're all not looking for jobs at the same time. So it'll be interesting to see. But that's my take on what I think Atlanta did with this. And I do agree with you, and I want to pass it back to you, Jeremy, is that Mr. Blank looked at this and said, my soccer team did this in 3 years. Why did my NFL team not do it when I gave them everything that they asked for to make sure that we were in position to win? So.
Well, I got two theories based on things you said. I'll start with this one. I very much think that the reason why all the coordinators were gone at the same time is because Arthur is he's pretty much whether he meant to do it or not this way, I'm pretty sure that he probably did. He took away all the excuses for Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn can no longer say, well, it's this guy, well, it's this guy, well, it's this guy. He's like, no, I just got rid of them. I need you to redo those positions and get a different guy in there because what we were doing wasn't working. We got to do it better. And then as far as Sarkisian, I'm with you on that. I can't put all the blame on him, and I don't want to put it all on Matt. But basically, this was my take. And to a lot of Falcons fans I've talked to in the last couple of weeks, they tend to like this theory a little bit. Sarkisian is a great offensive mind with a great scheme who, for some reason, never molded his system to especially Matt Ryan, but the pieces he had. On Matt's behalf, Matt is a really good quarterback. He's one of the top, you know, 7, 8, 10 in the league, who never molded his game to his coordinator's system. So they never really tried to work together, and that's why, usually, you know, when they did work together, when Matt would try to fit into the system as opposed to playing his game in the system, I think that's when you got the 40-point games. But the rest of the time, I think they just butted heads enough to where Arthur just said, all right, I was already going to get rid of a coordinator or so anyway. Let me go on and get rid of Sarkisian, and then that way Matt can't use that as the excuse that he doesn't get along with him. So he took all the excuses away for the two biggest members of the actual field team, that being the head coach and the quarterback. And I think that's kind of what happened.
I can see that theory. I can see that theory. And now if you've removed all of what you thought were the barriers, then what do you do now? So it's going to be real interesting to see what they will. I'm sure that Mr. Blank is highly disappointed that, you know, if at worst case scenario, he probably felt that they at least should have been in the playoffs. And they should have been. They should have won four more football games easily.
They should have at least been a wild card.
You know, they're not. Yeah, they should have at least been a wild card. And if nothing else, you know, he wanted to sit in his own. I'm sure he wanted to sit in his owner's box at this Super Bowl and have his team below him playing for the championship. And so now it's a lot of pressure put on Atlanta to go and do something with the Falcons and the organization. And I'm not going to be surprised. There's a huge overhaul next year. I think this starts. This is the beginning of a domino effect in Atlanta.
Yeah,
it's going to be real interesting to see what happens after the next year, after 2019, if not halfway through 2019. I think there's a lot of pressure on the matter right now to get it together and get it together right now from the fans' perspective, from the organization's perspective, from how soccer came in and made the huge transition with a quarter of the budget in 3 years and pulled it off. So now the pressure is on for the rest of the team to kind of emulate what has been done there in the form of a championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And next week, now, Falcons fans, I'm going to leave you with a high note here in a minute. But next week, we already know who the home and away opponents are going to be for the 2019 season. We'll get into that a little bit as far as our Falcons stuff. Here's the parting note for Falcons fans. Julio Jones not only caught more than two touchdowns this year, he ended up with 1,677 total receiving yards. So that's something to kind of hang your hat on there. But Coach had to duck out there, I believe, which is fine. We were right at the end of the show anyway. As far as the coaching carousel, like we said, it's so early in the process right now. Here's the things that you really need to know about it. The current vacancies, obviously the Arizona Cardinals, the Cincinnati Bengals. You have the Miami Dolphins, where Adam Gase kind of pushed it there. They were so on the fence about it, they said, you know what, do something. Do something one way or the other, I need to know. So they went ahead and sacked him there. He's already got interviews. You got Denver. That should have happened over a year ago, and Elway dropped the ball on it, dangling Vance Joseph like that. Come on, John, you're better than that. The Jets, the Buccaneers. That's an intriguing one. Green Bay and Cleveland, of course. And they're all interviewing different things. They're all doing the various things that they need to do. They're doing their due diligence and all the such like that. Obviously, in the next couple of weeks, as we talk some more playoffs and a little bit more Falcons and such, we'll get more into what's going on with the coaching carousel, because it really is a carousel. Like I said, right now they are They are all the candidates are in line. They are trying to figure out which horse or unicorn they may want to ride around a few times. And you know, it really is a carousel. We're going to see a lot of moving parts back and forth and those sorts of things. But I just do want to throw this out because nobody's really talking a lot about this. Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. Some people think maybe he'd be a fit in Tampa Bay. I thought for a couple of weeks Brian Kelly to Green Bay would make a lot of sense. Aaron Rodgers would love that, I believe. I just want to dangle that one out there, though. But, you know, that's going to do it for us this week. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We may do shows later in the day like that more often. Who knows? But just the way things play out. It played out better where Coach could join us for a little while, and it worked out. But that's been Sports Club NFL Wild Card Weekend. I am Jeremy the Impact York. Shout out to Coach Haywood Hill for joining us and dropping all those knowledge bombs. And it's really cool because he does have a working relationship where he has crossed paths with Ozzie Newsome and Reggie McKenzie. So to get those insights was really cool. Shout out to for Cody, for John, for Joseph, and for the King ATL and himself, Reggie Walker. I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
I got them shaking they boobies like Congo, man. I'm shaking the city like Quake. I hate them blue in the face like John Zoker. I'm drinking the cake, so let's bake. I'm taking the game's mine. Y'all witness the change, it's my time. Yeah, I'm new to the game, but y'all might wanna say you whack rap, stay like saving time. I can dance, homie, I don't too sell. Y'all looking at something like a true player. A girl told me that a man that can dance might can possibly get down with the tool in his pants. Now I'm a lady, let me see it vibrate. And when it's over, you ain't gonna need your bird. Cause I'm a pro, make you bend your back low. Then the pound it real fast, just like the percolator.
Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam!